I'm excited to be here. I'm sorry for drop those on Jeff. I think they're copies and they're double-sided is probably, or my daughter makes those outlines out for us. And I got here late and he's making copies of those. You're welcome to use those during our lesson. Also take it home because I know especially in my, where's my helper here? Tony, I turn that on. No, it's ready. You saw it's. I might have messed it up already. I messed it up. See, we may be late, but we'll be here till we're done, right? I think this is the only congregation I've been in where there's a sign on the back that says "Remember Lot's wife." And so every time I look at the clock to see how I'm doing, I remember. Oh, stop looking back, Ross. Yes, but I'm not looking back, right? I'm looking forward. But it's great to be here. I was looking forward to hearing Warren Berkeley. I know you guys probably were too. I'm excited that you invited me here. We are close. It was only a couple hour drive over here, and we took the pleasure. We just moved into the state of Iowa a few months ago, and we was able to make your meeting this last fall with Wilson Adams, and that was great and great to meet him for the first time for us. And good to meet the Hamiltons. They're another, their brother, or Jeff's brother, has been a friend of ours for many years from Arkansas, Glenn. And so anyways, there's lots of connections there that we're just learning about. And won't spend much more time. 10:15-ish. When do I need to cut it off? About 10:20? Okay. Or as traffic picks up, we won't crowd the worship service. This week for me, I used to have a secular job. I used to work in manufacturing a lot, and leadership was always intriguing to me. I was interested in what it took to be management, you know, and to be a manager of people, because after all, everybody wants to be king, at least for a day, right? And you remember Lion King, we're going to bring this up, Lion King Simba, the song, he's going to be the main event. I can't wait to be king, right? I'm working on looking down and all these things associated with the young lion and that song in that Disney movie. And so leadership is something that intrigues us all probably in some way, and we're interested in it. And God gives us a lot of examples of leaders, because he recorded the kings and the judges and look at the patriarchs in Genesis. And then we look at the apostles and the different servants in the New Testament. So there's lots of great examples to look at, and that's what my lessons are about this week. We're looking at these individuals and looking at their how they obey God or how they disobey God, because everybody wasn't a good example, were they? And even those who disobey God, some of those people were approved. And so looking at that and knowing whether we're looking at a leadership part of our life or just our Christian life itself, are going to make application. And that's going to be the theme through the week, talking about these different leaders or characters, we call them in the Bible. And it's kind of a portrait, is the term I used for the title that we have on our flyers. It's kind of, we take the scriptures that's given and we kind of develop a picture out of that, like a puzzle. And we don't have all the details of all these people's lives, but the Bible chose to tell us a lot of things. So we're going to look at some of those, and it's going to paint a picture for us. And for our lesson this morning, and I'll probably do most of a sermon out of this. Sometimes I try to do Bible classes, but I don't know everybody's names yet. So if you raise your hand, I don't know your name, and I might call you by the wrong name because I'm not going to remember very well. But let's take a look at 1 Samuel. If you're not there already, our material will be taken out of 1 Samuel. And we're talking about King Saul. If you remember, he was the first king of Israel, and Israel, like, we want to be like all the other nations around us. We want a king, you know, and Israel envied nations. It's odd that they envied him so much. They wanted to have a king because they had kings, and they wanted to serve their gods. The Jehovah God wasn't enough. They wanted to serve the gods of the nations around them. And so they got a king, and this is the first king that they had, was King Saul. And as we look at his example, to me, it epitomizes one of the aspects of leadership and in our own personal lives, how we live our life, whether we're a leader or whether we're just a follower. It epitomizes one of some of the fallacies or some of the difficulties we have and some of the challenges. And then that's going to come out as we look at the material. I'm also going to be watching because every presentation is different. I don't know. I'm hoping that you can read these in the back. So that's always a challenge. And you learn those things as you present lessons. And so you adapt if you're like me, you have glasses and sometimes they work and sometimes they still don't work. You look all different ways. So, if you'll follow me along here in 1 Samuel 13, the idea is, as the title says, King Saul's eye problem. And it's not the EYE, it's the I, me problem. And so if you look at 1 Samuel 13, we're going to go through and look at probably stories you might remember you learned as a kid for King Saul. Maybe re-familiarize ourselves with those stories because there is just, to me, this was a great study. And we're going to really, maybe the term we might use, we're going to look at the good, the bad, and the ugly of the old of characters. And so this one actually is in the category of the ugly. Okay, King Saul is not a good example for us. We're going to learn some things here. But so at Gilgal, one of the battles he's engaged in with the Philistines, and he has some interaction there that shows his character, portrays who he was and the way he thought about things and what he thought about God, what he thought about God's instructions. And that's what comes out here as we look at King Saul. So 1 Samuel 13, and starting in verse 5, we'll read this if you want to follow along. 1 Samuel 5, starting in verse 13. I'm sorry, 1 Samuel 13, verse 5. 1 Samuel 13, verse 5. The Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash eastward from Bethaven. And so you'll forgive me, first of all, if some of these words and names I stumble across and can't pronounce. I'm not good at pronunciating, and was talking to Tony this morning. I'm not good at English to begin with. But so there's what's going on there? There's a big battle. The people as sands of the seashore. So here's King Saul with his army, the Philistines with their army, and there's the battle scene. A huge army's come against God's people, right? God's people here. Notice verse 6, and the Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed. Then the people did hide themselves in caves and in thickets and in rocks and in high places and in pits. And I just remember to put this on hold. Ah, there we go. Get the recording. Make sure the recording works out here too. So verse 6, for the people were distressed. So King Saul's army, they're distressed. They hid themselves in caves and thickets and rocks and high places and in pits. What an army. You ready to go to battle against the Philistines with an army, and they're hiding everywhere they can find, in thickets and rocks and caves and pits. Some of them even fled across the river in verse 7. And some of the Hebrews went over Jordan, the land of Gad, in Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and the people followed him trembling. He had an impressive army, didn't he? They're scared. But here's King Saul, God's appointed. He's over the nation. They asked for a king. They have a king, and here he is. So as we continue on here, it gets into the narrative where King Saul's interaction shows some insight into his character and who he was and how he behaved. So in verse 8, King Saul tarried there 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. So we skip this, but Samuel had said, you go here and you wait 7 days and I'll be there and I will sacrifice to God. But Samuel came not, and the people were scattered from him. Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. So here's Saul waiting for Samuel. His army's fleeing, running scared. Philistines are bearing down. He's waiting for Samuel. And, you know, you're waiting. Samuel, where does Samuel go? There was, you know, he couldn't text ahead and say he was running late. But he run late, and King Saul sees his army, right? We're all there. We see King Saul. We can live this. If I'm King Saul and my army is scared to death and I've got to sacrifice to God, that's not happening. What am I thinking? I got to take care of my business with God, don't I? That's probably what King Saul's thinking. But what did Samuel tell him? We'll cover that. We'll actually turn to that verse. But Samuel had said, Saul, you wait there. The word from God says, you wait. But King Saul say, my army's fleeing. What am I going to do? I'm king, but my army's fleeing. The Philistines are bearing down. And so Saul says, give me the burnt offering and the peace offerings. In verse 9, and he offered the burnt offerings. And it came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of the offering, the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. I don't know if when we was kids, if you remember, we maybe doing something we weren't supposed to do, and all of a sudden mom and dad walked in the room. Like, oh, Samuel, hey, glad to see you. I've got the sacrifice offered. We're good to go now, right? And you see King Saul saying that, right? Samuel arrives. King Saul's just finished doing what he was told not to do, to wait. But Saul runs out and salutes him, verse 10. In verse 11, Samuel said, what have you done? Saul said, because I saw the people were scattered from me, and you came not within the days appointed, and the Philistines gathered themselves, the Michmash. Therefore said I, in verse 12, the Philistines will come down upon us, upon me and to Gilgal, and I have not made supplications to the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered the burnt offering. I had to do it, Samuel. You were late. My army was fleeing. The Philistines are here. I had to offer this offering. Then verse 13, Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandments of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom upon Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart. And so we see here, Saul offers this sacrifice. We get it, don't we? Hey, if I was there, I would be second guessing what's going on. You see your army fleeing and Samuel's not there. You're watching your watch. Why is he late? Is he always late like this? But he made it. Samuel made it. But notice that Saul kind of took things into his own hand. The story reads very plainly to me. In other words, as you look and see what happens there, all that we've talked through here, Saul says, I saw and I said to myself, I have to offer a sacrifice to God. I have not offered this sacrifice, and therefore I forced myself. That was his story, and he was sticking to it. That was his story. I'm going to stick to it. I had to do this. And we get that, don't we? We get that. We understand why he would make those kind of comments. But Samuel had instructed him, and it wasn't. He didn't mince words. It wasn't confusing. But if you look at 1 Samuel 12, it's probably maybe in the same opening there, verse 24 and 25. He was instructed, or had instructed Saul already. Samuel was trying to get King Saul to follow God, in 1 Samuel 24 and 25. There he says, fear the Lord and serve him in truth with all your heart. For consider how great things he hath done for you. In other words, you got all these examples. Look what he's done, Saul. Look how great God is. Look what he's done for you. But if you shall still do wickedly, you shall be consumed, both you and your king. Now, it's talking to Israel in general, but it's that Samuel's teaching them. And if you back up a couple of chapters, Samuel had already given King Saul the instructions in 1 Samuel 10, verse 8. In 1 Samuel 10, verse 8, this is where Samuel told him, gave him instructions for that moment that he failed to do. You shall go down, Samuel says in 1 Samuel 10, verse 8. You shall go down before me to Gilgal. I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and to sacrifice, or the sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days you'll tarry till I come to you and show you what you shall do. Samuel made it very plain. And Samuel in his instructions to Israel as a nation, to King Saul, don't fear, obey God. Instruct, follow him, trust in him. But who does Samuel trust in? He trusted in himself. He relied on himself here. He's like, I have to do this. I have to offer sacrifice. That kind of the old ends justify the means. My army's fleeing. I must do something. My army's fleeing. The Philistines are coming down. Notice we continue on. There's some more narratives here as we look at King Saul that continues this thought, this picture, this portrait as we look at King Saul. And if you're wondering, none of these are very flattering, actually. These are not accommodations to King Saul. He avenged his enemies. In 1 Samuel 14, and we're not going to read all of that section there, but in 1 Samuel 14, there is the narrative there, still at Gilgal. And we'll read a few verses. We'll start at verse 24. Let's start the narrative here to get the picture started. The men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured his people, saying, "Cursed be the man that eats any food until evening, that I may avenge my enemies." So none of the people tasted any food. I don't know about you, but if I'm exhausted or if I'm working hard, every once in a while you got to stop and eat, don't you? You get hungry, you get tired, you get labored. And so Saul has sent his army out and said, "I don't want you to take anything until you've avenged my enemies." Notice those words again Saul keeps using here. "Until I avenge my enemies. So don't eat." Well, if we continue on in the narrative there, we see he limits his soldiers. So his soldiers are out there fighting, battling, running distances, catching up with the enemy, all exhausting work. And he limits his, because he says, "Don't eat. We don't have time to stop and eat. You go and conquer my enemy. Avenge my enemies. Avenge me of my enemies." So notice they were his enemies. And you remember the story? Jonathan, his son, didn't hear these instructions. Jonathan says, "Oh, here's some honey." Jonathan breaks Saul's rules. Notice in verse 27 chapter 14. "But Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Therefore he put forth the end of the rod, and it was in his hand, and he dipped it in a honeycomb and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened." In other words, he was revived. He got that honey and that sugar, and he was revived. "Look how much energy I have now." It's like we all would if we was exhausted from a day's battle. And in verse 29, "Then said Jonathan, 'My father has troubled the land. See, I pray you, how my eyes have been enlightened, or how I'm invigorated, because I tasted a little of his honey. How much more if happy the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies, which they found? For there had not been much had there not been now much greater a slaughter among the Philistines?'" So there would have been a greater slaughter if Saul would have permitted his men to partake of the spoils, to eat. So Saul's victory was limited. And so the soldiers were faint because they were withheld food. And in the end, it affected how he conquered his enemies. His victory was limited. They were faint and could have done more. And in the end, Saul was not allowed to pursue them any further, to conquer them as a nation, to even annihilate them. Of course, we know when King David come along and Goliath come along, the Philistines are still there. It may be that Saul would have had a chance to obliterate the Philistines, so they were no more an enemy of Israel. But his victory was limited. If you look at verse 36 and 38, it shows that happened there. We still have a problem, though. Jonathan disobeyed King Saul's instruction. What's King Saul going to do? His son disobeyed his instruction. What is King Saul going to do? Look at verse 42 through 45. Saul said, "Cast lots between me and Jonathan, my son," and Jonathan was taken. So now he knows who broke his rule. Saul said to Jonathan, "Tell me what you have done." And Jonathan told him and said, "I but tasted a little honey with the end of my rod, and it was in my hand, and lo, I must die." And Saul answered, "God do so and more also, for you shall surely die, Jonathan." Jonathan, his son. But then the people, verse 45, said to Saul, "Shall Jonathan die? Who has wrought this great salvation in Israel? God forbid, as the Lord lives, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he has wrought with God this day. So the people rescued Jonathan, that he died not." So Saul's selfishness. He wanted this victory. He wanted his enemy avenged swiftly. You don't take time to eat. And so Jonathan is rescued by the people. Jonathan is rescued by the people. And then 1 Samuel 15. This is the end of the end for Saul as king. God's first anointed, one they begged, give us a king like all the other nations, and so God does. And we see now in 1 Samuel 15, the battle with the Amalekites. This is the end of King Saul's kingdom, as for all practical purposes. So let's look at this passage real quick. And this is going to bring some more lessons to mind as we look at King Saul. Verse 1 through 9, the narrative with the battle with the Amalekites. 1 Samuel 15, verse 1 through 9. Samuel also said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint you to be king over this people, over Israel. Now therefore hearken unto the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus said the Lord of hosts, I remember the Amalekites, what they did to Israel, how he laid wait for them in the way when they came up out of Egypt. Go now, smite Amalek, utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not. Slay both man and woman, infant, suckling, ox, sheep, camel, and donkey. There's his instructions. Remember this battle scene? So verse 4, Saul gathered the people together. He numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 footmen, 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and laid wait in the valley. And verse 6, he lets the Kenites go because they'd shown favor. And then verse 7, Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah. Until you come to Shur, that is over against Egypt, and he took Agag the king, notice verse 8, and he took Agag the king of the Amalekites alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But, there's another one of those, that word, right? But, Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and of the fatlings and of the lambs. All that was good and would not utterly all that was good and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuse that they utterly destroyed. King Saul was given a pretty plain instruction, wasn't he? Utterly destroy these people. Utterly destroy them. They've done evil. This is God's judgment against them. And Samuel, Saul has received his instructions. Notice God's response. So you can't hide livestock, right? They make sounds. Not that you could hide anything from God anyways. Verse 10, then came the word of the Lord to Samuel, saying, it repented me that I have set Saul up to be king, for he has turned his back from following me and hath not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried to the Lord. Verse 35, we'll get to verse 35. Saul didn't do what God commanded him here. Notice as he's confronted about this, in verse 13, Samuel came to Saul. Saul said to him, blessed be thou, the Lord, I have performed the commandment of God. I've utterly destroyed the Amalekites. I did keep King Agag, but I destroyed the Amalekites. We destroyed all the bad stuff, and the people, they kept the good to sacrifice to God. I paraphrase what's next, right? Samuel says, what is this bleeding of sheep in my ears? In verse 14. And the bellowing of oxen I hear. And Saul said, oh, they have brought, the people have brought them. Wait a minute, are you King Saul, right? This is King Saul? They brought them from the Amalekites. For the people spared the best of the sheep. To sacrifice unto God, the rest we have utterly destroyed. We've destroyed everything, but we kept this to sacrifice. And if you continue on and notice verse 20 and 21, and Saul said to Samuel, yea, I've obeyed the voice of the Lord. I've gone the way which the Lord has sent me and brought back King Agag. And have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the spoil, the sheep and the oxen, the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God in Gilgal. Yeah, the people now, I didn't do this, the people kept the good stuff, but they're going to sacrifice that to you. I utterly destroyed the Amalekites, and I only kept King Agag. You see where we're going with this, right? He didn't follow the voice of God. He didn't. Samuel rebukes him. There's two sections of verses here, verse 22 and 24. Samuel's rebuked there. Samuel said, does the Lord have a great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken better than the fat of rams. Notice what he says in verse 23, for rebellion. King Saul saying, I've done good. It's the people that done this. So Samuel says, rebellion is a sin of witchcraft and stubbornness as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. In verse 26, Samuel said unto Saul, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you from being king. He didn't obey, did he? He didn't obey. He had done what he, basically he did what he wanted to do, didn't it? If I'm a conquering king and I've got King Agag, look at it's his trophy. I'm a king and I've conquered this nation and I got the king of the Amalekites and he's got him on a dog chain basically. Look at my trophy I have here. I like to hunt and I like to keep trophies of the nice animals that I harvest. And this to a king, another king is a trophy. And then the people, the people did that. I'm king over this nation, but the people decided they wanted to worship you and offer all this as a sacrifice to you, God. We have done what you requested, except they didn't, did they? Look at King Saul's repentance here. So I am hard on King Saul here, okay? In verse 25, Saul says, pray thee, pardon my sin, and turn again with me that I may worship God. So Saul is asking for forgiveness. But also notice in verse 27, as he continues to blame the people, Samuel turned about to go away, and he laid hold on the skirt of his mantle. So Saul grabbed hold of Samuel's skirt, and Samuel said to him, the Lord has rendered the kingdom of Israel from you this day. It has grieved it to a neighbor, given it to a neighbor of yours that is better than thou. And also the strength of Israel will not lie nor repent, for it is not a man that he should repent. And then Saul said, I have sinned, yet honor me now, I pray you, before the elders of my people and before Israel, and turn again with me that I may worship the Lord thy God. I put repentance in parentheses because this whole time, what has King Saul been doing? He said, I've done right, but I have kept King Agag. Well, wait a minute. What did God command? He said, utterly destroy them. Was keeping King Agag utterly destroying? No. The people kept all the good stuff. If I've got a herd of livestock, of sheep, cattle, goats, you're going through another nation, you're picking out, you're saying, boy, look at that herd of livestock. This guy had a pretty good herd of livestock. Look at the quality of that animal. You think the people were sitting back lusting after the great value of the product that they found? Yeah, they were going to offer it to the Lord, but even as King Saul's responsibility, was he king or not king? Was he saying, this is what we're going to do and this is what we're not going to do? Ultimately, what the people did was Saul's responsibility, wasn't it? That's the part of being king. But Saul was always saying, well, the people did this, not me. And so I put a quotation marks, King Saul's repentance. When I read verse 29 and verse 30, I see King Saul's like, I got to still be king. I got to have respect to these people. Samuel, please, please, please. I don't know if that was so much about repenting to God as it was keeping his position as king. I want the people to respect me. And he does not seem to so much be worried about what God thinks. And that's my thoughts about that. So he says, I have performed the word of the Lord. They brought them back. I hope I obeyed the voice of the Lord, but the people, I feared and obeyed the people, King Saul said. I feared and obeyed the people. King Saul really had trouble accepting responsibility, didn't he? He had trouble. He's king, he's appointed king, and now he's in trouble, isn't he? I don't know about you, but I know there's been lots of times in my life I've got myself in trouble. I'm like, what am I going to do, right? King Saul, all he wanted is to keep his position at king. Keep his position at king. Well, what are some lessons we can learn? We see that King Saul sought strength for himself. We didn't read this, but in chapter 14, verse 25, or 52, I'm sorry. Why does a nation that has God on their side need strong men, is my question. Think about that. In 14 verse 52 of 1 Samuel, there was a sore war against the Philistines in the days of Saul. And when Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he took him to himself. What's he doing? He's building his army. Why? He thinks he needs men to fight his battles. Who fought Israel's battles? It was God, wasn't it? It was God. God fought Israel. Saul didn't need these valiant men. God would provide. How many men did Gideon have? Can't remember the number. Some of you guys help me out here. 30? 300? 300. 300 men. God wins the battle with Gideon. Saul looked to himself, didn't he? He looked to himself. And he'd been warned about this. And we've already looked at 1 Samuel 8 previously. And that sheet, you're welcome to mark those and maybe even go back if you want to later to study it. The psalmist here, God was to be their king. God was going to fight their battles. God was going to avenge his people. Who would Saul want to avenge? Saul want to avenge my enemies, he said. I must avenge my enemies in 1 Samuel 14. But God is the one who avenges the enemies. These were not Saul's enemies. These were God's enemies. And so we saw that there. But notice his son. Out of all this, his son's faith is astonishing. And there's lots of men of faith in the Bible. We're going to read about some of those as we study this week. But in 1 Samuel 14, verse 6, notice Samuel's faith here. Jonathan said unto the young man that bore his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised, that it may be that the Lord will work for us. For there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few." By many or Jonathan knew that. His son knew that. But what did Saul do? He needs all the strong and valiant men. So we have a king who's looking to his own will, to his own power. And King Saul's got humble beginnings. As we kind of wrap this up and talk about lessons, he hid among the luggage. Remember that story? We won't have to go there. You're welcome to go back and read that. He was small in his own eyes, Samuel even says to him. But he hid. He was humble. But what happens when you have in life as novices, as the New Testament, as Paul instructed Timothy, novices sometimes we're lifted up with pride, aren't we? Sometimes we let that get the best of us. And certainly Saul started out humble. But we see he really looked to himself in the end. So from a title lesson, his eye problem. He looked to himself at Gilgal in his own vengeance, looking for strong and valiant men. The war with the Amalekites. He looked to himself and didn't trust in God. And as we talk this week, especially when we get to David, we're going to talk about a man who trusted in God and dealing with this fine line sometimes between Ross Ward doing something and God letting it be accomplished. Saul was looked to his own devices, trusting in God. Learn that from Samuel here, don't we? From Saul, just trust in God. Have faith in God. Certainly part of that is obeying God's command. That's where one place King Saul failed, and we're going to make that point too. Some of the Psalms and Proverbs about that. Trust in God. Trust in God. Trust His command. His commands are there for a reason. Samuel gave Saul a reason at Gilgal. You go and you wait 7 days, and when I'm there, I'll offer the sacrifice, Samuel said. But Saul decided to do it for himself. All Saul had to do was trust in God and trust in Samuel. Samuel was going to do his work. Samuel said he was going to do his work. Put your trust in God, Saul, and it'll be okay. But Saul didn't, did he? Saul really didn't trust in God that well. He kind of stumbled there. Have faith in God's instructions. And that fell off the bottom of the slide here. But in Matthew 7, this epitomizes this doing works because the ends justify the means. That's kind of what we're talking about, right? The ends justify the means. This is a good work, therefore I'm justified. You know, King Saul says, "Oh, we got the spoils, all these great livestock. We're going to sacrifice to you, God." So the ends justify the means. Is that not exactly what Jesus taught there in Matthew 7? Not everyone that says to me, not everyone that calls me Lord, not everyone that acknowledges me Lord shall enter the kingdom of heaven. But who will? He that does the will of my Father which is in heaven. But look at these great and wonderful works. Like King Saul, he offered that sacrifice. Verse 22, many will say in that day, "Have we not prophesied in your name and done cast out devils and done many wonderful works, and I will profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, King Saul, you worker of iniquity. All he did was sacrifice. He worshiped God. What's wrong with that? It was not what God instructed, was it? And that's where we can second guess ourselves. We can come up with our own righteousness. We can say that this is good and right and honorable. And it might be good, but is it righteous? Is it God's good versus man's good? That's what Jesus was saying. Look, he said, these are all good things, but what did they do in Matthew 7? They done it for the wrong reasons. They called Jesus Lord, but they didn't obey him. And so for man's own wisdom, for us to say, I'm going to do this because I know this has got to be good. God would want this. We probably hear that, don't we? We might be tempted to think that. God would want it this way. But that's not God's righteousness. That's man's. That's my decision. God defines what is righteous and has instructed us on that. And we see that in Scripture. And God defines what righteousness is. And God delivers results, right? King Saul wanted to deliver results for God. He tried to take it upon himself. We saw that. Samuel had in chapter 12 where he was talking to the people, talking about what God, all that God had done for them, reminding them God's capable. God does this work. Even Jonathan, his son, knew and understood God's ability to help. Whether by few or by many will God save us. He conquered Goliath, and he conquered the Philistine nation by the hand of one child. We're going to talk about this later this week in David. Jonathan had that faith. Just one person. God doesn't need an army. So trust in God. And this is neat to me to think about this. Maybe sometimes we overlook this. I'll bring all these up. God opens doors for us today. We look at in 1 Corinthians 3 as the Corinthians are kind of at war with each other, as I was baptized by Apollos, and I was baptized by Paul, and I was baptized by this person, and Peter. And he's instructing them there and says, look, Paul's saying, we're just messengers. We're just servants. Who gave the increase? Was it by their hand? No, it was by God's hand. God gave the increase in 1 Corinthians 3:6. And as we look at Paul's evangelism work, God opened doors for Paul. He opened doors. He talks of that in 1 Corinthians 16, and we won't necessarily turn to those, but you're welcome to look at those on your own. God opens doors, and he opens up doors for us today. Opens doors of chances of evangelism, and no matter what work we put into it, who gives the increase? It's God. Whose word are we teaching? It's God's word. It's not my word. This is not Ross speaking of Ross's wisdom. This is of God's wisdom. And so doors are open in a church. During Revelation 3:8, a door was open. I think it was Sardis. A door was open to them. God opens doors. God opens doors, and God delivers results. And so we come up in balancing this idea of I'm the messenger, I'm the servant, I'm the tool, versus I'm the King Saul, and I'm just going to go do what I want to do. And I'm going to conquer this enemy because it's my enemy, versus the like a David that we're going to talk about, who went out on the battlefield, not charging to condemn his enemy, not charging to destroy his enemy, but following with faith in God, going against the enemy of God. And there's a mindset difference there, isn't there? There's a mindset difference between I'm doing Ross's work versus I'm doing God's work. And there's a line there. Notice, King Saul, this is real for us, right? Accept responsibility when wrong. You know, King Saul tried to avoid that. He tried to say, I did right, but it's the people's fault. You know, he kept blaming the people. That we can do that. We can do that. I'm hard on him. Okay, I look at King Saul, and I think somebody just trying to save his position in the end, even in the end. He lost that. His kingdom was taken from him, and a David was come up in his stead as king. And so there we have a portrait versus that to me kind of epitomized who Saul was. If you look and study the rest of King Saul's life, he had a miserable life. Absolutely miserable life. He started out humble. He started out in a good way. He hid among the baggage. He was so intimidated. He hid among the luggage, it said. But he became a king of his own will, basically. Ross's words. He come out to do what he wanted to do, when he wanted to do it, how he wanted to do it. Basically, he completely he rebelled, as Samuel charged him. There in 1 Samuel 15, I think that sums up who King Saul was. 1 Samuel 15, verse 23, rebellious and stubborn. That was kind of Saul, wasn't it? We might have a couple minutes. Questions or comments about that, about the material? I know I just sit there and talk. Y'all have sit patiently. Hope to provide more material like this. Looking at people who serve God. King Saul's are ugly. King Saul didn't do it. He failed, didn't he? But we all fail. Are any of us righteous? We're not, are we? None of us are righteous. The great encouraging lesson out of all this is, I mean, King Saul, did he take anybody's wife? Did he kill a valiant man to cover up his sin? Did he lie about it? King Saul didn't do none of those things. Y'all recognize that for King David? David did all those things. Who was justified before God? Saul or David? There's a powerful... David stood. Why was David justified before God? He killed a man. He took his wife, got her pregnant, and tried to kill the guy, or tried to conceal it. Go home, Uriah. Your wife's at home waiting on you. But he was justified. Because he always, what did Saul not do? Saul didn't ever turn to God. He didn't accept that. You think God would have forgiven Saul? You think Saul's kingdom in some way might have continued and been blessed by God? But he was not. Why? He was not justified. King Saul failed because he wouldn't accept what was wrong. I contend he never truly repented to God. Yes, he continued to be king. He continued to cause trouble. So, comments. I appreciate you patiently sitting there listening to me ramble along for a few minutes here, 40 minutes-ish. So thank you, and we'll look forward to worshiping here together in a few minutes.